Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket.
I've had houses that were listed for $100,000 and offer them $20 because I didn't want it. And the agent calls me up the next day and said the seller's accepted it.
Are you ready for the best real estate investing advice ever? Join Joe Fairless and today's best ever guests as they share it with you. It's the best ever advice with none of the fluff. Let's go.
Do you know how you can benefit from crowdfunding? If you haven't checked out our special series, Best Crowdfunding Crash Course Ever, presented by Patch of Land, then you need to. It's episodes 152, 159, 166, and 173, because you'll hear from the industry's leading crowdfunding experts on how you can benefit by getting involved, whether it's getting access to funds for your deal or passively investing in other people's deals. The time is now to get started. Go to patchofland.com/best ever to grab your copy of the top 10 answers to the top 10 crowdfunding questions. That's patchofland.com/best ever.
Hi, Best Ever listeners. Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever show. I'm Joe Fairless, and I'm here with today's guest, Mike Butler. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Joe. How are you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for joining us. Mike's joining us from Louisville, Kentucky, where he has a very, very, very interesting background. He is a former undercover police detective in Louisville, where he was investigating murder-for-hire crimes and organized crime, as well as other things. At his peak, he was buying two properties every week while he had his full-time job, and now he owns and operates several hundred properties. And we've already said some interesting stuff, but here's another piece of info that's interesting. He has never gone to a bank to buy an investment property, nor has he used private lender money or hard money. So I am very curious about how the heck that happened. So with that being said, Mike, can you give the Best Ever listeners a little bit more about your background and what you're focused on now?
Sure. I take pride in being that long-term undercover detective. And when you use the word former, a lot of people will assume that I got in trouble or something. That's not the case. In fact, what it was, I got to retire early from the police department because of my real estate investing, because my wife gave me a choice. It was her or the police department. She didn't like me doing that stuff. But anyway, when I got started with this, I wanted something that was going to supplement my police pension. And back then, the pensions weren't that good, and a lot of people would retire. And then Churchill Downs, I just grew up a few blocks from there here in Louisville. home of the Kentucky Derby. Well, these retired police officers, they'd get jobs riding in a golf cart on a graveyard shift making minimum wage. I didn't want to do that. So, and I didn't want to, you know, be a guard at a church picnic or a bank or construction site because you're trading your hours for dollars. And so without any mentoring or help, just plain old common sense, I thought, well, real estate might be something I might be interested in. And so I began watching all the studying the market, learning about it best I could, using classified ads for the most part in the newspaper. And back then, the market conditions are pretty much like they are now, Joe, in that banks wanted 20-25% down or a little more before they give you a bank loan. Well, I had a huge issue. Okay. My wife's in nursing school. I was married. We got two beautiful daughters. And we've got about $1,000 in the police officer's credit union. So there's no way I could do 20 or 25% down. Can you see that?
I can see it.
Okay, so I still in my gut believed that real estate was my ticket to true financial independence, but no experience. So what I did is I started off with, let's call them fixer-uppers. And for the most part, it's like they were burnout landlords or to settle an estate. And so my people skills were pretty good with interviewing folks and what have you. As a result, I polished that in the police department, being able to interview dirtbags and stuff. And then what I did is I figured out how to get them to tell me what I needed or what I wanted and who they did it with, wherever place they did, where's all the stuff now, how many other ones did they do. And so I kind of polished that and I just transitioned that into my real estate business, working with motivated sellers. I can tell everyone on the call that the number one common denominator in every deal that I've done involves a motivated, they all had a motivated seller. And if you can find the motivated sellers, okay, well then true motivated sellers, Joel, will help you put deals together because they need to get rid of that problem too. And I've got a definition, Mike's definition of a motivated seller, if you want to hear that in a bit or.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's hear it.
You want to do it right now? Okay, this is Mike Butler's version, and I think it describes it to a T. Okay, a motivated seller definition, write this down, guys. It's the person with the authority to sell a piece of real estate, and that person has a problem. And selling that real estate will solve all or a major part of their problem. That, my friends, is a motivated seller. You like that?
I like it.
So how many times you wasted phone calls and your precious and valuable time talking to somebody that's a good Samaritan, somebody at church or a sister or brother, neighbor, all that. Yeah, it just fires you up, doesn't it?
How do you identify the motivated sellers? What's your approach?
Well, I let out this secret little question here, but this is a million-dollar phrase, okay? And the reason I can tell you this right now is because you can't use it universally. Remember I talked about how I polished my system on interviewing dirtbags and then transitioned that over to motivated sellers, okay? So you got to build rapport with them first, and that comes in kind of like the how to win friends and influence people, but it's kind of like that, but it's a Mike Butler version of that. And here's this magical question. This is a million-dollar question here, Joel, and I trust you're going to give me credit every time you use it, okay, in your shows. But at the appropriate place and time when you're interviewing, taking that initial call or interview from someone that wants to sell a property, about two-thirds of the way down, you're going to ask them, why are you unloading this house, Joe? Or why are you unloading this property, Joe? And you know what? Isn't the word unloading like a friendly, professional way? Say, I don't pay retail.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, and so you won't offend them. But I tell you what, if they're not motivated, You will feel like the old Pioneer speakers or Bose speaker commercials or whatever. You'll feel both feet come through that phone and hit you in the head. Because they'll say, I'm not unloading this thing. I just want to sell it. I called you because you buy stuff. You buy real estate. But you'll find out real quick if they're a motivated seller or not. And you know what? And I'm going to switch over here and it's going to get in negotiation a little bit. But remember that motivated seller, Joe? They got a problem, don't they? Is that right?
Absolutely.
So if they've got a problem, just like kids, just like a spouse, just like your parents or brothers and sisters, business associates, people, if they've got a problem and you ask them an open-ended question like that, why are you unloading this property? Oh my gosh, you give them an opportunity to throw up, to get that cancer out of their belly. And they'll go on and on and on and sound like Charlie Brown's teacher and to tell you about two-thirds a bunch of stuff that you don't give a flying rat's kahuna about. But they will tell you a lot more, and it gives you a better understanding. Now, after you release some stress, Joel, how do you feel?
Fantastic.
Who gets credit for it?
Depends on how it happens.
Me or whoever's talking to the motivated seller. So if I give that motivated seller the opportunity to throw up and they ramble on for either 30 seconds or 7 minutes, who gets credit for that? Who made them feel better? You do. You get that credit. So now they're going to fall in love with you and build a little bit of rapport. That's just part of it. Can you see that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I could also see the flip side where you're giving them an opportunity to throw up, and throwing up isn't a pleasurable experience for most people, and they're associating the negative feelings of throwing up to being around you. Have you ever come across that?
I disagree, and here's why. Okay, and I'm going with, I've got another ad that popped up here. That's, all right. But anyway, here's why I disagree, okay? Because keep in mind what your competition's doing. Your competition is using a 24-hour answering service, or they got voicemail, or they use something like a pager with some kind of greeting, leave your name, number, this and that. And if they have a real person answer the phone, Joe, have you ever called one of those 1-900 we buy dirty houses people?
Yeah.
Okay, so what they ask you, what's your name, what's your cell phone, what's the address, how much you owe on it, and listen to what the seller's saying. The seller's doing this. Mike, 123 Main Street, 1200, 3, 4, yes, no. Chase, Wells Fargo, maybe, I don't know, blah, blah. You see what?
Right.
Then they might go through a list of 30 questions, but they're never given the opportunity to throw up. Therefore, they're treated like a number on an assembly line.
So how do you structure the deals with the sellers so that you don't use bank financing and you don't get private money?
Okay, good question there. And that's where we sort of got started and we kind of got sidetracked. Keep in mind, I had less than $1,000 in the police officer's credit union. So my daddy taught me how to use my hands to change the oil in my pickup truck so I could save money. He taught me how to fix a broken dishwasher so I could save money. That's the rich dad, poor dad story before that book ever came out. Okay. And so I learned real quick not to do that. But anyway, I was good with my hands. So I would target the ugly houses like on my old paper route. I had a paper route in grade school, not high school, but grade school and high school both to pay for high school tuition. And I would tell them, I'd say, yeah, I'd like to buy this thing. I can fix it up. But let's imagine having a burnout landlord property, you know, is never going to qualify for any kind of first time homebuyer loan because of the condition that it's in. And it doesn't have to be that bad. And or like settle an estate with a ton of deferred maintenance, what have you. And so they would be open to seller financing. OK. And of course, they're greedy. So then they want a down payment, right?
Yep.
Here's another phrase for those of you just getting started and still want to use your hands. And I'm going to let you do that on the first few. Then I'm going to break your arm. So then you're going to start writing checks instead of working on houses. But anyway, here's what I would tell them, Joe. If I give you all my money, I won't have any money to fix it up. I can't buy any materials. Does that sound fair? Does that sound like common sense?
Yep.
So they'd have faith in me that I was capable of probably turning this thing around. But if they took all my money, I can't buy it. So that set the stage for them to work with me better, doesn't it? And oh,
sounds like it.
And oh, by the way, I got a full-time job. Okay, so I can't work on this full-time. So it's going to take me several months to get this thing, although I could knock it out in 13 days. But anyway, I tell them it takes several months before I could get this turned around. And so I would always ask them, I said, and no payments for 12 months. Now what'd they say?
I don't know. What'd they say?
Yeah, they just frown, don't they? So how do you respond or reply to that? Well, I'll tell you what here, Ralph, look, just got a little money and I need all of that for materials. And it's going to take me some time to put this together, get it back, and then get the thing rented. I'm going to have to cut the grass and materials. I'm not going to have any income for a while. And I'm going to go way in the hole. So I'm going to need 12 months with no payments to help get me caught back up and back in the driver's seat. Now, most of the time, they'll cringe at the thought of 12 months. And guess where they're going to? What's splitting it down the middle?
Right.
6 months. Remember that old saying? You know, if you shoot for the moon, if you fall short, are you a loser? No, you're not a loser. You're just a star. So if you want to go 6 months with no payments, ask for 12. It makes them feel like they earned it.
So you approach a motivated seller, you negotiate the price, then you use the phrase, if I give you all my money, I won't have any money to fix it up. So you negotiate it so that it's favorable to you. Then during that fix-up period, you negotiate 6 to 12 or however many months you want, no payments to them. Then what happens?
Well, we kind of got the cart before the horse. So we got down to the after the price has sort of kind of been agreed upon or this and that or at least discussed. But what happens prior to all that, Joe, is it really doesn't matter what the sale price is. Now, listen to me very carefully on this, okay? Because I don't want you to go out there and just start buying stuff and not paying attention to purchase price. But here's the method to Mike's madness here. People will call or fill out my forms on our website to buy their house or their property. And they'll always get this question, Joel. They'll say, well, how much do you pay? And all these other ones will do like 80% of market value minus repairs and this and that. Somebody else says 70%. Now, here's another $1 million answer. Okay, you ready?
Yep.
I pay market value, sometimes more, okay? And let me give you a real short story on this, for example. Nice three-bedroom brick ranch in suburbia, and this house has a two-car detached garage, concrete driveway, double wide. Real nice bread-and-butter, cookie-cutter rental, okay? So I go over and talk to Bill and Ethel, or whoever they are, and Bill's stuck on a sale price of $125,000, and he just won't budge. And I'm banging my head against the wall. He's motivated. Everything else fits, but he just will not budge on $125,000. So then I asked him. I said, Bill, why are you stuck on $125,000? And he walks me through the front door, and he points across the street. He says, see that house over there? Yeah. He says, that one's just like mine, and it's got a carport, and mine's got a two-car garage. And they sold their house for $115,000. So long-term neighbor friends, basically in whatever, some kind of grudge match maybe, or I can one-up you, you know, good old males wanting to be the best.
Right.
And so he's stuck on $125,000 for that reason right there. And I said, okay, so now I understand, Bill. How about this? How'd you like me to give you $130,000? What do you think he said then?
He would be ready to get out of there and sell it to you.
Did he smile? Yeah, he was like wanting to do a Toyota happy dance. Can you see that?
Yep.
He wanted $125,000 and I'm going to give him $130,000. Now, let me take this to the ultimate extreme just for training purposes. Okay. What if I could give him $130,000 for that house and I'll pay him $1 a year until it's paid for? Does that make sense?
You'd be all right.
If we get to control the terms, does it really matter what the sale price is?
Not in that scenario.
Okay. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. So you could give him $150,000 for it. Of course, your property taxes would be based on that probably. But just this week, in fact, I'm doing one today. This is unbelievable. This is how motivated folks can be. Got a fellow who's got a nice four-bedroom, three-bath brick home with a two-car attached garage. And he wanted me to buy his house because he was buying another one. And he had one of those 5-1 arms or some kind of adjustable thing. And I didn't want to take no part of it. Okay. And I told him, I said, James, if you'll go and refinance that thing and get a low 30-year fixed rate, I'll buy it. Well, guess what the bozo did? He went and refinanced. It got like 3.25% fixed for 30. Called me back and said, I did it. I'm ready to sell. So I jumped that loan. And that one's happening right now today. We'll be closing on that. Let's see. What's today? Wednesday? It could happen before Friday, maybe the first part of next week. Already got a tenant in it, too, because he had moved on and bought another home. Isn't that neat?
So you constantly are looking for motivated sellers. That's clearly, as you said, the number one common denominator across the board for all your properties, right?
Yes. If they're not a motivated seller, move on.
I imagine this is probably going to tie into the answer to this question or what we've been talking about, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is your best real estate investing advice ever?
I'm going to say education. There's a couple of things here, okay? When it comes to housing in America, I mean, that's up there with religion and cherry pie and baseball and all this and that. Very, very precious. There's the, you know, fair housing laws. There's all kinds of government regulations, federal, state, and local. So you got to stay on top of that, okay? And where a lot of gurus, okay, will drop the ball is they will school and train new investors and just totally ignore fair housing. And, buddy, you better be on top of that. So how do you get fair housing training? Well, I've got a little class on that, but if you belong to any local REIA group or check out your local board of realtors, they'll let guests go in there and take a fair housing class. So that's number one, and you're going to combine that with education. Okay, so just imagine getting 30 years of experience crammed up into a home training system. Look at all the potholes and the pitfalls and the school of hard knocks that you're going to bypass. And don't forget about my book if you want to do that. I mean, just imagine, this is kind of simple. Although I've got a decent-sized portfolio, Joe, I'm shocked that when I do get to work with investors, I'll ask them this question. It blew me away. How much money in your pocket monthly would make you a happy camper? You know what the number one answer is, Joe?
What is it?
$10,000. And majority of folks say $10,000 will let me do what I want in life and pursue the passions that I want. And that's all. They don't want to make $50,000 a month and not have time to fart. So, but in order to get that $10,000 a month, just imagine this, 20 nice rental houses that rent for $1,000 a month paid for. That'll put $10,000 a month in your pocket, unless you're in California or Chicago or someplace where the property taxes are more than the house. But that's pretty simple. So education, get in touch with those fair housing laws, stay up on top of that. Government is your partner here, whether you like it or not. As you grow your business, you want to look at asset protection, privacy. And, you know, if you've got something, everybody on Jerry Springer, you know, they got all those attorneys want to help us find somebody to sue. And if you use the word landlord, oh, my gosh, what kind of pockets do they have, Joe?
Right. Yep. Large one.
Yeah. What about real estate investors? What kind of pockets they got?
Large ones. I got a follow-up question for you.
Sure.
So I just want to make sure I clearly understand your business model. So you find a motivated seller, you agree to the terms, you fix it up, and then once you fix it up, what do you do with it? Do you sell it? Do you find a buyer for it? What's your model?
Okay. I've got to make one little adjustment with what you shared there. When I got started, I did fixer-uppers. Today, no more. Okay?
Okay.
A fixer-upper to me is paint and carpet. Maybe a mechanical or something, electric, a roof or something like that. None of that stuff of moving walls and putting in skylights and all that stuff. So everything's got to have a motivated seller. And we use a website to drive them here. 98% of my business comes in off the website. And they got to have a motivated seller. Now, I focus more on terms than anything. And the style of the property, I want low maintenance that are very, very, like one-story brick ranches next to no maintenance. You can make those things pert near maintenance-free on the outside in today's materials and things like that. So I like to have that, a good location. And then everything that I do today, Joe, goes into my self-directed Roth IRA. And if you don't have one of those guys, you need to get one yesterday or last week. And because, long story short on that, your self-directed Roth IRA can buy real estate as an investment. And do you want to pay taxes on the seeds or pay taxes on your crops? How about paying taxes on the seeds? So you open up a self-directed Roth IRA with after-tax dollars, and all the profit that grows in there is tax-free. There's a lot more benefits than that, but the traditional IRA is a tax-deferred program. So be careful about learning about that stuff. But once again, education, you know, it's always got to be there. Education and knowledge is what's going to give you power. And implementation, practice, you're going to make some mistakes out there. Hopefully they're little ones, but you got to practice and go out there and do that stuff.
Going back to the model. So you find a motivated seller, you focus on the terms, you find a low maintenance property, good location. So once it qualifies, you do seller financing with the seller. And then so you have whatever down payment, if any, and then you keep it for a long-term hold? Is that the approach?
There's four or five exit strategies that I have, Joe. Okay, most of the time, if it fit everything that you just described, that's a buy and hold. So what I have done here in recent years since everything crashed is I'm cleaned up my portfolio. So I'm getting rid of properties that are not in my backyard. I want to condense and have all my properties in one county right here in Mayberry, Kentucky. So I use one court system, one legal team, and as far as the licensing for the trades and all, not have to deal with landlord-tenant laws in other states. So if it fits my criteria, it's going to be a rental, okay? Now, you need to know what you're going to do with the property before you make your offer. We've got exit strategies, and I'll go through them very quickly with you. Number one's wholesale. Number two is wholetail. Number three is to wholesale and seller finance to an investor, not to an owner-occupant. The other one would be buy and hold. And then lastly would be retail. And I'm not a fan of retailing in today's market.
Got it. Okay, fair enough. So you have multiple exit strategies and multiple approaches depending on the deal that comes across your desk.
Yeah, and see where it fits and how many of those that'll fit in. Back when I was really burning it up, buying a bunch of stuff, Joe, I recall I had like 24 properties in the pipeline that I had contracts on, I've not closed on yet. And then as you become a good buyer, you'll get folks, other investors come up and want to get some of your crumbs. So if you got 24 in the pipeline or 17 in the pipeline you haven't closed on yet, maybe you take your five bottom ones and you wholesale them for $5,000 extra. Here, give me $5,000, I'll let you have this deal. And I would do that every month. And I've just gotten I guess with a little age, you get a little wiser, you work smarter, and I want to give you an investor pledge, Mike Butler investor pledge for all your listeners. You ready?
Okay.
Okay. How many times have you gone out and looked at a property and walked away and said, no deal here? Have you ever done that?
Yeah, I think there's always an opportunity for a deal. It just depends on if they're willing to, you know, go in with the terms that I want.
Okay. I can recall I did that, but back around 1991, I implemented my own Mike Butler investor pledge. And here's the way it works. Okay. I promised to myself and my family from this point forward to make an offer on every property that I take time out of my precious day to go view. To make an offer, even if ridiculous. Okay. I have to remind myself of my own investor pledge. Okay. But long story short, if you're going to do this stuff and go out there and look at a property, don't walk away and say there's no deal here. I want you to make an offer on it, even if ridiculous. And once I implemented that and stuck to it, what it's going to do is cause you to focus more. It's going to cause you to stop wasting your time. And you know that if you're going to drive out there and look at that thing, you're going to make an offer, even if ridiculous. And I've gotten free houses that way. You know, I've had houses that were listed for $100,000 and offer them $20,000 because I didn't want it. It was listed with a real estate agent, Joe. And the agent calls me up the next day and cusses me out and said, I didn't know this, man. If I'd have known that, I'd have bought it myself, but the sellers accepted it. Crazy things like that. I know we're pushed on time, but as you can tell, I'm just passionate and excited about helping folks discover opportunities and things that I never had growing up. And if I can do it, you can do it too.
And definitely agree. And I love the passion, that's for sure. Are you ready for the best ever lightning round?
Yeah, let's have at it.
First, a quick word from our best ever sponsors.
Crowdfunding. You've heard about it, and now it's time to learn about it. Our best ever sponsor, Patch of Land, is a leading expert in the crowdfunding space, and they've got all the answers to your crowdfunding questions. Go to patchofland.com/best ever and grab your copy of the top 10 answers to the top 10 crowdfunding questions. That's patchofland.com/best ever.
Okay, Mike, best ever book you've read?
My own, Landlording on Autopilot. Number one bestseller business book on Amazon. Get it, you'll love it.
Best ever listeners, I know you like audio, so you can go to freebesteverbook.com and get a free audio version of a book that you love. Best ever personal growth experience and what you learn from it.
I'm going to say those success seminars that they used to do years ago, where they bring in highfalutin celebrities and get y'all pumped up to go out there and become a Donald Trump.
And what'd you take away from it?
That life is the journey, and you need your success is the journey. It's not at the end of it.
Best ever success habit you practice?
Making offers. That's when you make your money.
Best ever deal you've done?
A combination of getting houses for free and real estate for free. And it almost always happens with buying in bulk. You heard the old saying, it's cheaper to buy eggs in the country or buy in bulk. Well, make an offer on 9, 10, 12 properties and make them throw a couple of them in there for free.
Best ever project you're most excited about right now?
E-commerce.
Best ever way you like to give back?
Doing what I'm doing now and live training events and coaching, mentoring.
Best ever quote?
Knowledge is power.
And what would you say is the biggest mistake you've made in real estate?
Education.
What do you mean by that?
I started out with no mentor, no coach, not knowing there's any gurus or RIA group or anything like that. And I made a lot of mistakes along the way. And so after I got educated and learned, I sure would have had a lot fewer school of hard knocks had I got educated first. Or along the way, I'd say.
And lastly, what's the best ever place to reach you, Mike?
Hopefully on a cruise ship in the middle of the ocean, but I love doing cruises. But just at MikeButler.com.
Mike, thank you so much for being on the Best Ever Show and sharing your best ever advice with the best ever listeners and talking about your approach to finding motivated sellers, having those $1 million questions that you mentioned, you know, one of them being, if I give you all the money, I won't have, or this isn't a question, it's a statement. If I give you all the money, all my money, I won't have any money to fix it up. The question of, why are you unloading this house or property right now? And that's actually a question I'm going to use on a 130-unit portfolio that I'm negotiating this week. So thank you selfishly for that. I appreciate it. And, you know, the other question, or the statement rather, whenever they ask, how much do you pay, saying I pay market value, sometimes more, because if there are any clear takeaways, which there are a lot of takeaways, but two of them that are very clear is, one, find a motivated seller, and two is control the terms. Those are the two main takeaways that I got. I mean, in addition to these many other things. So very grateful to have you on the show. Learned a whole heck of a lot. Thank you for all that you did undercover. I'm sure the community of Louisville is very appreciative and grateful for everything that you've done there. And it's been a pleasure. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joel. Adios. Bye-bye.
Hey, you best ever listener. Do you want more? Then go to joefairless.com, where you'll get tons of free videos, templates, and content to help you get deals done. And remember to subscribe to the best ever show in iTunes, so you can keep getting your daily dose of the best real estate investing advice ever.